racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me.
A big welcome to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. I'm Bob Bupke, proud to be here with the STL Golf Geek on Twitter. He's Mr. St. Louis in the golf world. His name is Jay Randolph Jr. And Jay, certainly a lot to talk about, of course, mainly the first for the Byron Nelson in a brand new location. I don't know if you had an opportunity to see too much of it on television. If you did, your thoughts.
I like that style of golf. I love quote unquote links or golf courses that are devoid of trees. I think you and I are on the same wavelength that a golf course in Dallas, Texas is not the same as one in Killarney, Ireland. You know, so you're never going to, replace that, or like we've seen, like, you know, at Shinnecock or, you know, those places up there, National Golf Links. But I like the style of golf course. I was a little surprised at how low they went, Bob. And obviously with the weather situation on Sunday. But I did watch a lot of it. And, I mean, you got to be impressed with the winner. We're going to talk a lot about him today and maybe in the future.
No, you're right about that. And let's talk about another winner. I know you had a big event at your facility. The wonderful Normandy golf operation. You had the Normandy Am. How'd that turn out?
Bob, it was the 32nd playing of the Normandy Amateur. A young man who goes to Maryville College here in St. Louis, Connor Maloney, won. I think the golf course won. Plus three was the winning score. That's a high winning score for the Normandy Am. The golf course was in great shape. And one thing I've got to tell you real quick, seven-time USGA champion Ellen Port, four mid-AMs and three U.S. senior amateurs. She teed it up with the boys from the same tees. She finished second in the senior division and tied for 13th in the regular division. And the first day, this 57-year-old gal, playing from the blue tees with the boys, beat 75 guys. She's amazing.
Well, congratulations. I mean, that just goes to show you when you have talent, it certainly comes through, and it came through there in the Normandy Am, and I'm glad that it was a huge success. Another success story. How about him, Jay? Only 21 years old, playing in only his 26th PGA Tour event, and he comes out on top. Aaron Wise, of course, you know, he was a winner at the collegiate level, had success on the Web.com Tour, so not a big surprise, but maybe a little bit surprised that it came this quickly.
You may be right on the quickly, but again, we see what a little experience on the Web.com, and it was just a little bit of experience for this kid. As you mentioned, at 21 years of age, his collegiate golf coach, Casey Martin at Oregon, said he's never been impressed with a player more than Aaron Wise, and that's at the age of 21. He took over that golf tournament. You know, Mark Leishman looked like, hey, I got off to a great start with a 61, and now I'm just going to cruise, and I'm going to get another PGA Tour victory. Aaron Wise had been rising, and he rose to the top on Sunday.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because I kidded him a little bit about what transpired a couple of weeks back. You know, he was playing very well down at Quail Hollow in the Wells Fargo, and actually had finished second. Was hanging around when Nick Watney came to the 18th green. He had a 54-foot putt for birdie, so Wise said to me he didn't pay much attention to it until it hit the bottom of the cup and cost him about $200,000. But Aaron Wise more than made up for it by coming in first place at the Byron Nelson.
He sure did, and you had the chance after the round to ask him about the walk-up 18 with a three-shot lead.
You've won at every level, NCAAs, and Web.com. Matter of fact, congratulations. You're the 500th player that graduated from the Web.com Tour to win on the PGA Tour. 500, so you'll go down in the history books for that. But obviously winning at every level prepared you for today?
Absolutely. You know, I was happy I went to Canada on the web, just because if I came out here, I would be a little bit lost. And I felt like those year and a bit gave me some time to kind of realize how to travel, realize how to play week-long golf tournaments and not burn myself out and live kind of a normal life on the road. So I wouldn't be where I'm at without those events. And like you said, I've won at every level. It's incredible to get my first win out here. I'm honestly shocked it came this soon, but it's pretty incredible. The stat that blows my mind is when people tell me I was in high school 4 years ago, because I feel so far removed from that. And, you know, it's been an incredible journey. I hope it's just the start of it. You know, I feel like I'm playing great and I've got a long ways to go. So I felt great. I felt calm. Thought I managed myself well. You know, there was times when I let my mind wander and think about the fact that I could win this golf tournament. But then I was able to refocus and was able to win.
4 years removed from high school, a pretty nice walk into his bank to deposit that $1+ million check that he earned for winning the Nelson.
Well, and Bob, here we go again. Another young player, very young player, putting his name up on the stage and succeeding. And, you know, last year we saw it with John Rahm. I'm not saying Aaron Wise is at the level that John Rahm is, but, I mean, you know, when you get off to this type of start off the bat, who knows what's next?
Well, probably that's the question that Jordan Spieth is asking himself. Who knows what's next? He's a member at Trinity Forest, obviously an ambassador for AT&T, but he tells us he's still not putting the way he wants to.
I felt like I played better than I scored. Typically, when you say that, it just means, you know, putts didn't go in. But, you know, even today I made one, probably my longest one of the week on number one from about 12 feet. And I felt really good about the strokes I made today. They just, you know, just burned edges or just barely missed. And I misread a lot of putts too. So overall, just struggled a bit on matching line and speed and kind of getting it all together out here. Game's in good shape. I'm very confident going forward. Like I mentioned the last couple days, it's always been a struggle for me reading these greens, and this week in the tournament was no different. I'm going to a place that I've been very comfortable and have putted well consistently in Colonial next week. So the utmost confidence.
You know, Jay, it's going to be a big week for him at Colonial, because if that putter doesn't respond there, he's just about used up every excuse for the poor putting, other than, I think, simply a case that he's lost some confidence. And you know, with your extensive playing background, boy, is it tough to putt when you don't have confidence.
Well, and Bob, the statistic that they gave late Sunday in the broadcast, the fact that he had not made a putt over 12 feet really all week. I mean, this is a guy that was making 20 footers like they were 2 footers a couple years ago. And I don't know what it is. I do think this is, as you said, Bob, very astutely, that, you know, you kind of get a sense that, you know, he knows this spot. He's played well here. If he doesn't putt well this week, you know, what's that say leading up to Shinnecock?
Well, that's a great question, and I wish I knew the answer.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that Jordan Spieth even wishes more that he knows that answer. Speaking of Shinnecock, I think you're going to get a kick out of this. And Adam Scott, come on a radio show that I was doing from Trinity Forest in the Dallas area. And after I said to him, very casually, I said, what do you think of Shinnecock? And he said, Bob, it's one of my favorite golf courses in the world. I said, wow. I said, you know, I live up there. He said, well, I'm going up a week early, and I've hired the caddy that caddies for the best player there. The best player happens to be a guy by the name of Jimmy Dunn. Jimmy Dunn's pretty high up in the golf world. He's also he's president of Seminole down in Florida. So
that tells me.
Yeah, that tells you a little something. So I just say, well, Adam, you know, you're going to be up there the week before. I'm going to be up there the week before. I'm doing a little work trying to get people to come into the merchandise tent. I said, I'm planning on having a little cookout on Thursday night, the week before the U.S. Open. I'd like you to come. He said, I'd love to. And he walks away. And then somebody else in the media reminds me, they said, you know, Adam's not in the U.S. Open yet. I said, what? You got to be kidding. He's planning this whole week. He's hired the caddy. He's going up there. He's got a place to stay. He's coming to my barbecue, and he's not in the field. That is what confidence really is.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think he just, like I assumed, I think he assumes it's U.S. Open time. I got to be there for my tee time on Thursday. He stepped it up last week. He's a former champion here. You know, we talked about the big week for Spieth. This is obviously a giant week for Adam Scott. I mean, a top 10. I mean, I don't know with the way those world rankings fluctuate, but you got to figure a top 10 here or better. And he's jumping into the U.S. Open. But I think he's just, you know, he's telling everybody he's going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I admire his confidence. I mean, he didn't put a caveat on it and say, well, you know, that's if I end up qualifying. He's flat out coming. He better now because I ordered an extra hamburger, and I don't want that to certainly go to waste. But he's going to have a good shot here at Colonial, as you referred to, Jay. He likes that golf course. He's won here. A good top 10, and I think that'll get him high enough in that USGA ranking. Has to get into the top 60, and I think he'll be able to do that. And, he's played in every major since 1999, so there's quite a streak of majors on the line for Adam Scott. And obviously he's in the Open Championship, and he's in the PGA, and, of course, he's in next year's Masters. So this U.S. Open really represents four more to his tally. The only one with more than him is Sergio Garcia, that's played in 75 majors in a row. But best of luck to Adam Scott.
You're listening to The Guru Room, powered by Vertical Group Golf, the new face of golf. Heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, Talk Sport 2, TuneIn, Audio Boom, iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker, Alexa, to play the Grill Room Golf Show, and you'll be connected. And, Bob, let's take a look at that Dean and DeLuca that you were talking about, the Fort Worth Invitational. Charles Schwab has stepped up. Dean and DeLuca bailed it out, as I mentioned. And always a fantastic course this time of year is Colonial.
Well, of course, the legendary locker of Ben Hogan there. And I think a good time in the show to share this little story with you, Jay. You're going to get a kick out of this. It's been well documented that both Byron Nelson and Ben Hogan both caddied at the Glen Gordon Country Club when they're 12, 13 years old. And in my conversation with Peggy Nelson, which we'll have later on the show, I said, how proud was Byron that he defeated Ben Hogan in that caddy tournament? And she says, you know, Bob, he was happy about that, but what really made him happy was that every year the members of the club put on a caddy boxing tournament in December, and Byron Nelson knocked out Ben Hogan. He was really proud of that. So we found a completely different side of Byron Nelson. Not only beat poor Ben on the course, but beat him in the boxing ring also. Kevin Kisner is our defending champion, one of my favorites. Dwayne Bach is on his bag, one of the top caddies out there. Ricky Fowler. Looks like maybe about that time of the year where Ricky Fowler's got to get it going, Jay.
Absolutely, and this will be a good test for him. This is the kind of golf course that you don't overpower. This is more precision, so it'll be good for Ricky to get back and play prior to the United States Open. Jordan Spieth, we talked about him earlier in the show. Huge week with his experience there. And the fact that he's got to get that putter going. Webb Simpson teeing it up, our players champion. We'll see if he can keep his momentum going on, the former U.S. Open champion and the reigning U.S. Open champion. Bob Brooks Koepka is in the field, and a guy who played here as an amateur three or four years ago. I think it was 3 years ago, Bryson DeChambeau. Of course, he went to SMU.
Yeah, he loves it there, and you know, I'm kind of leaning a little bit towards Bryson DeChambeau, the way he dresses, the way he acts. He's a little bit of a throwback on the PGA Tour, and certainly the U.S. Open being played on a little bit of a throwback-type golf course. Shinnecock regarded as one of the finest in the world. I think Bryson DeChambeau is going to fall in love with it if he's not already been out there. Zach Johnson going to be playing, and certainly, Jay, you know, Colonial certainly fits the game of Zach Johnson.
It sure does. I mean, you talk about a guy who finds fairways and is very accurate with his irons. Watch out for him, a former champion there. And as we mentioned, Adam Scott started to show a little life last week, still with a chance to get in the top 60 and a former winner. You're listening to The Groove Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf, and heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis. The Armed Forces Radio Network, Talk Sport 2, TuneIn, Audio Boom, iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or just ask your smart speaker Alexa to play The Groove Room Golf Show, and you'll be connected.
It's time now to groove up with Vertical Groove Golf. So let's take a look at the first major of the year on PGA Tour Champions, the Regent's Tradition. Quite a winner, Jay.
No, one of the most interesting men in golf, Miguel Angel Jimenez, cruising to victory. He got it going early, kept it going, stunning 19 under par total again. This is a major. They've got five of them. 19 under par. Nearest to him were Joe D, Joe Durant, Gene Sowers, the pride of Savannah, Georgia, and Steve Stricker. And good for Stricker, because he really needs the money. 16 under par.
Yeah, Steve was in a little bit of a dilemma. He was thinking, hey, maybe I'll go and I'll play in the Byron Nelson. No, I think I got a better chance at a bigger payday at the Regent's Tradition. He went there and certainly played well. There were a lot of vertical groove drivers in play last week. Unfortunately, our main man, John Daly, obviously, he was playing with the vertical groove driver. He loves it. He leads the tour in driving distance, but he had to withdraw because he did break his toe.
Definitely. We wish the best for John and hope that he's okay. Some other guys that did use it, Rocco Mediate, tied for 8th. Kenny Perry, who loves it, tied for 13th. Doug Garwood keeps popping up in the top 20, tied for 16th. Also playing the driver this week, Wes Short Jr. Tim, and I'm going to tell you this, folks, I met him in St. Louis in 1987, and he told me his name was Petrovic. Some people say Petrovic. I don't know. Tim P. Also using that driver, and the veteran, well, they're all veterans on the Champions Tour, but Scott Hoke also using that driver, Bob.
Yeah, more and more vertical groove drivers. And if you want one, you want to add distance to your game, you want to add accuracy, very simple. Go to vertgolf.com, customize your club. Now, this week, it's the PGA Tour Champions, second major of the year, the KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship being played in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Bob, what the hell are they doing playing two majors in a row?
I don't know the answer to that, Jay, and it was in my contract that you would never ask me tough questions. You just made a violation.
Well, even though I don't understand it, Bob, there are some wonderful champions that are playing. There's some of our vertical groove boys, Kenny Perry and Wes Short Jr., Mark Calcavecchia. He, like me, is loving that vertical groove three-wood. Man, that's such a good club. Tom Kite, my man Peter Jacobson, the pride of Raytown, Missouri, Tommy Pernice Jr., former PGA champion David Thomas. This is a solid field for a Champions Tour major. Gene Sowers, who played so well this week, going to try and back it up in back-to-back majors this week at Benton Harbor. And also Scott McCarron, who continues to be one of the best out there over 50. Time to take a short break, and when we return, we'll go to the Vertical Groove Hotline and see what the MorningRead.com's Alex Maselli has to say, and then we'll hear an exclusive interview between Bob and Lord Byron Nelson's wife, Peggy. What a treat.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at the Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. The facility uses a unique dynamic pricing structure that golfers seem to love. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Joining us now on the Vertical Groove Hotline, Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of Morning Read, what I call the fastest growing golf news source in the industry, a collection of just great golf writers that contribute on a regular basis. Alex, I know you're at Media Day at Shinnecock. I'm going to talk about the golf course in a moment. I know some time was devoted to probably trying to justify the two-hole playoff that's going to be put into play this year in the event of a tie after 72 holes. What was the reaction?
Well, I don't know if there was much of a reaction by the people listening to Mike Davis try to justify it, but I got to be honest with you. I would never have bought anything from that man because he could not sell anything yesterday when we were in that interview. I mean, he talked about so many things, but to get back to your original question, the second hole playoff, he did not explain it. He just really didn't. He didn't give us a legitimate reason why they went to a two-hole playoff, considering that in other USGA events, the playoffs are even longer, three, sometimes they were even four, but the stroke back to three. I think, to be honest with you, the reason why they picked two is because sudden death, three and four were already taken.
Well, that's probably as good a reason as any. Well, there's no doubt why they picked Shinnecock to be the host for the 2018 United States Open. And obviously, one of the classic golf courses in the entire world. You got to play it yesterday. Give us a little update on the condition and how you think it's going to, what kind of an examination is it going to provide for the best players when they get there in a couple of weeks?
Well, I think what's interesting about Shinnecock is that it's going to need weather to make it as compelling as it's been in the past, and largely because these guys. So we think 14 years ago, how much equipment has changed in 14 years, and at the same time, they've widened the fairways on almost every hole to averaging over like 45 yards to where they were under. You know, they were right around 30 yards maybe in the past. At the same time, we have all this equipment that really not only hits, well, you can let you hit it longer, but it really lets you hit it straighter. So if you, if you're one of these, you know, professionals that show up at Shinnecock, you're pretty used to hitting the ball where you want it to go. I mean, unless you're spraying the ball, you weren't going to win the thing anyways. I don't care what golf course you're on. So I think that if you can control your golf ball to a large extent, you're going to be in very good shape there. It's a very difficult golf course, obviously, for most of us. But these guys are so much better than they were 14 years ago, Bob. And I think that it's going to be quite interesting to see exactly what they can or can't do. The course was in great condition. The greens were tremendous. There's a lot of grass on the green, so that means you're going to be able to cut them down because they're very healthy. They're going to be able to cut them down to pretty much as low as they want to. So they're going to make them, you know, 12 on the stimp meter. But the bottom line is again, because of how good these guys are, if there's not some decent wind in that equation, I think that golf course is going to give up some low scores.
One last thing before we let you go, we're speaking with Alex Maselli on the Vertical Groove Hotline. In your opinion, long ball hitter, ball striker, short ball hitter, is that golf course going to favor any one category of player?
I think it's a second shot golf course, first of all. So you want to be in the right position off the tee. That does not mean you have to be long off the tee. You just want to be in the right position off the tee. Augusta National is also a second ball golf course, second check golf course, and obviously that's imperative that you're in the right position off the tee. So you take somebody like a Jordan Spieth, who is really a much better iron player than he is a driver of the golf ball. There's a great example of somebody, or a Justin Thomas, who's long but also a very good second shot player. I think the real benefit, though, at the end, is because of the way the greens are, with false fronts, a lot of runoff, I think you want to be a high ball hitter. I think that if you can hit the ball high in the air and be able to let it land, I think you're going to have a huge advantage, much more advantage than if you're a long ball hitter.
Well, I got to tell you, it's not always that Mr. Maselli and I agree, but I just am dumbfounded by this move. I know there's some reasons behind it, but I don't get the two holes. I think if you played 72, you got to play at least 3 to 5. I just don't think, boom, boom, it's all over. But, you know, the only thing constant is change. But not down at the Byron Nelson, because that's where Bob had the chance to catch up with his pal and the wife of Lord Byron and reminisce a little bit with Peggy Nelson.
Fortunate right now to be sitting alongside of Peggy Nelson, Byron's wife. And first off, Peggy, 50 years, it seems amazing.
It really is amazing. Byron would be so tickled just to get to be here still, but I think he's happier where he is. He's been in heaven for 12 years now, so this rain has been quite a surprise today, but the tournament will go on, and it'll be a great, great championship, I'm sure.
A lot of people certainly know about his 11 victories in a row in 1945, 18 wins that particular year. Is there something that you know about Byron Nelson that might surprise the general population?
Oh, my goodness. I think to know that every day he was every bit as humble and gracious to people as you see him on TV and everywhere. He was, I mean, being married to him for 20 years, sometimes he would actually say, I'm not as good as people think I am. And I would think, I'm with you 24/7. I have no idea what you're talking about, because unless you're throwing things out in your wood shop, which I would never know if he told me. But he just was just the sweet, kind, patient, dear, and very funny man. I think people didn't realize what a great sense of humor he had.
Well, it's been a privilege to share some words with you, Peggy Nelson. You look great, and look forward to seeing you for a long time to come.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
You know, Bob, I know you and I both have had the pleasure to meet Byron. Peggy carries on a lot of the same great attributes of Byron. He was always a very happy and humble guy.
Yeah, and I think you put it very well, happy and humble. And when you think about it, that's not a bad blueprint to go through your life. If you can always be happy and you can always be humble, you really don't mind when the end comes.
I'm humbled a lot. I just don't know about the happiness. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Group Golf, the new face of golf, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, TalkSport 2, TuneIn, Audio Boom, iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, where you can just ask your smart speaker, Alexa, say, hey, Alexa, play that Grill Room Golf Show, and you'll be connected. Time for another short break, and when we return, we'll turn to our Voices of the Game partners and hear an interview with host Kelly Elbin and ESPN's Bob Herrick, who has got an interesting story about Jack Nicklaus.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
The Grill Room is thrilled to support the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and all superintendents doing great work for the game we all love. In fact, we call them the unsung heroes in golf. Here's what major winner Jordan Spieth has to say.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Right.
Welcome back to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. Try that three wood, customize it. Go to vertgolf.com. Now it's time to turn to our Voices of the Game partners and hear an interview that Kelly Elba did with Bob Herrig, and he's going to talk a little bit about Jack Nicklaus.
That's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been found.
Hi, this is Kelly Elba with Golf Life Navigators. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Voices of the Game, where we spend a few minutes with some of the great golf writers in this country who've seen a few players, traveled a bit on the road. I think our guest today, Bob Herrig from ESPN.com, certainly qualifies. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Glad to do it.
10 years with ESPN.com, but also 20 years with the St. Petersburg Times, now the Tampa Bay Times, as newspapers unfortunately have changed over the years. You've been out covering many major championships. Jack Nicklaus is somebody who has played in many major championships. There are all kinds of stories about Jack, but you in particular wanted to chat about the 1998 Masters, when Jack, at age 58, kind of came pretty close, didn't he?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I missed 86, you know, when he won at age 46.
Right.
And, of course, you hear the stories, if you watch the video, just how incredible that day was and just how, you know, it moved so many people. Well, yeah, I think in some ways 98 was a close second to that. He was 58 years old. Mm-hmm. He was in the midst of this very long streak of playing majors. He had not missed a major championship since he played in his first Masters as a pro in 1962. I believe his streak ended a little bit later that year at the U.S. Open. He played like 146 straight. But at that Masters, you know, on Sunday, he was playing in the group in front of Tiger and Ernie Els. And Tiger had won the year before. It was a really kind of a neat bringing together of eras, if you think about it. I mean, Arnold Palmer played in that Masters. He didn't make the cut. Jack's in contention at 58. Tiger is in the group behind him. And then you've got a guy, Mark O'Meara, who ended up winning at age 41, you know, Tiger's friend. But, I mean, you had these different levels. Tiger's in his 20s. Ernie Els is a fairly young guy at the time still. And Jack at 58, Mark O'Meara wins at 41. And Jack made a charge on that front nine that day that was, you know, it was ear-shattering. It was amazing. You know, he chipped in for a birdie on the sixth hole, I recall, and the place was just going bananas. You know, it was absolutely amazing to think that, you know, could he summon this again? Could he do this?
Sure.
You know, and obviously he didn't quite pull it off. But, I mean, to tie for sixth in a major at age 58, you know, just he shot 68 that day. Incredible.
You know, we talk a lot about Tom Watson at the Open Championship a few years back at age 59, coming so close to winning the Claret Jug. And yet, I'm not sure as many people remember this. As you and I are taping this, it's the 2018 Honda Classic here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. So it's the 20th anniversary of Jack in 1998. When you're covering an event like that, are you on the golf course? Are you in the Quonset Hut, the old media center at the Masters? Tell me about that day for you and what it's like covering such a special moment.
Yeah, and the Masters is a tough one to cover. There's no inside the ropes access. The crowds are huge. But that day I was out there. I remember distinctly, you know, he made an early birdie or two, and all of a sudden he's somewhat up there.
Yeah.
And so there was some murmuring, you know, a lot of excitement. So I went out there. I got with him. I saw him chip in on six for birdie. I believe he birdied the seventh. He has since said several times that he felt if he could have put together a similar back nine to what he did in 86.
Right.
Now, I don't think he expected to shoot 30, but he needed some sort of a – you know, he in 86, he birdied or he eagled 15. He birdied 16 and 17. He needed something like that.
Exactly, that's right.
And it the rally kind of fizzled. And it was a great tournament still. I mean, you know, O'Meara made a birdie putt in 18 to beat Fred Couples. It looked like a playoff. You know, David Duval was in the mix in that tournament. I mean, just great
leaderboard. Really, really good players. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I was out there, and you're just, you know, that's a place where you really hear it.
I was going to say, I was going to ask, hear it, because you hear talk of the Tiger roar or the Jack roar. Are they different sounds to it, or are they all of a major high level?
Yeah, I would say a Tiger and a Jack roar are probably in the same ballpark.
Right.
You know, Tiger has talked, and so has Ernie. They were in the fairway, I believe it was on three, the third hole, waiting, you know, to hit their approach shots, mm-hmm. and Jack made birdie up in front of them. And they looked at each other like, what's going on? You know, and I mean, yeah. Think about that. It's just, it's really amazing. I mean, Jack did, you know, Jack still played majors until 2005, not every one.
Right.
But, you know, to have those two guys behind him.
Yeah.
One group behind. I mean, you know, it's just there's not too many stages where that could occur, something like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask, as we close with Bob Herrig, if you would give a sense of that stage of the Masters and how unique Augusta National Golf Club is, and being really in what is the shrine of golf for so many, in covering and having Jack and Tiger and the rest of them in a final round.
I mean, you know, there's sometimes been a negativity associated with the past champions being able to play. You know, as the golf course has gotten more difficult, there's been a sense that, you know, they're just taking up space, or, you know, they have no chance. But at that time, the golf course hadn't been revamped as much. Mm-hmm. And even though it was still a long course and a young man's course, a guy like Jack could get it around because he knew it so well. Mm. And, you know, to have those different ages,
yeah.
You know, the Tom Watson example that you mentioned, you know, is an excellent one also, because he was so far beyond, you know, the age of, yeah. of a player who you would think could win.
Sure.
But it was every bit the same for Jack. And I think that's a harder venue for an older player to win than an Open Championship venue, where length isn't as big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
The greens aren't as fast.
Yeah. And not as severe.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, still remarkable what Tom Watson did. But you know, in its own way, what Jack did 20 years ago was, you know, it's not always about the wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say that all the time about Tiger. His cut streak, the number of cuts that he has made in his career, even to this point, with all he's been through.
Yeah.
You know, he's missed as many cuts in his career as Jordan Spieth. And Justin Thomas has missed more. Jack contending it at age 58 is just one of those things that kind of, it gets pushed down the list because everything else is so great. But it still is, you know, it's just as impressive to me as a lot of other things that he did.
That was Bob Herrig, ESPN.com. We encourage everybody to check out Bob's terrific ongoing coverage of the PGA Tour and all things golf. Bob, thanks again for your reminiscing on the 1998 Masters with Mr. Nicklaus.
Thank you.
Well, anytime, Bob, you can hear something about the Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus, it's always a good day.
And it's a good day because we're just weeks away now from the 2018 U.S. Open, second major of the year. Going to be out at Shinnecock, my neck of the woods. Looking forward to it. We're going to have complete coverage right here on the Grill Room.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.